For my company, I only hire from FMCA and IIN. Occasionally I'll hire from Dr. Sears, but that's it. And what I'm looking for is I'm looking for someone who is on the track to become nationally board certified. So Board of Medical Examiners, same board that certifies brain surgeons, now has a certification program for health coaches. And that obviously holds us to a way higher standard. We're able to work in medical practices, we're able to bill insurance, that kind of stuff.
Why are health coaching and functional medicine seen as two keys to the future of medicine? And how can nurses get involved in these burgeoning industries? Let's talk all about it with functional medicine nutrition counselor, health and wellness coach, and fitness and nutrition expert Hallie Brooke, right here on episode 470 of The Nurse Keith Show. Hello, this is Nurse Keith. This podcast is about you, your personal and professional development, your career, and the healthcare system writ large. And I'm always here to share education, ideas, diatribes, and informative interviews with some of the most inspiring people from the worlds of healthcare, nursing, entrepreneurship, and beyond. I love having you along for the ride, and I thank you from the bottom of my nurse podcaster's heart for being part of the growing Nurse Keith Nation. If you'd like to help other people find the show, my ubiquitous request is that you leave a rating and review over on Apple Podcasts. You can also do so on Google, Amazon, or Spotify, or just share the show with anyone who you think might enjoy it or get something out of it from any app where you choose to listen. You can also become a patron at patreon.com. It's patreon.com/nursekeith. As little as $2 a month is a great help in keeping things rolling here at the Nurse Keith Show. Again, that's patreon.com/nursekeith. I appreciate you all so much. And like I said, we are here with Hallie Brooke. She is a functional medicine nutrition counselor, a health and wellness coach, and a fitness and nutrition expert. And Hallie, it's really good to have you here. And the first question I want to ask you is, why do you feel that health coaching is the future of medicine?
Oh, yeah. I love that question. So health coaching is really about lifestyle and behavior change. And when we're talking about people who are dealing with chronic disease, whether it's obesity or, you know, heart issues or brain function or GI issues, it's all lifestyle. The prescription that's really truly going to change that is changing the way that they eat, changing the way that they move, the way they think, the way they stress, all of that. And when we're looking at people who have those symptoms, they're usually, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60, which means they have 3, 4, 5, 6 plus decades of habits that have gotten them into that position in the first place. And giving them a prescription or telling them to lose weight or telling them that they need to exercise more, we know that that's just not going to happen. And so how do we help people really make the lifestyle changes that they need to make in order to become healthy, well, whole functioning people? We have to teach them how to do that. And we have to hold their hand, and they need accountability, and they need support, and they need recipes, and they need workout, and they need all of these things. And so often, you know, I see kind of the Western medicine model, write a prescription and send someone home, and that person goes home and they might really truly have a desire to change, but they have no idea how to do so. And then obviously there's a lot of people who don't have a desire to change and don't really care whether they feel sick or not. And so why is health coaching the future of medicine? Because the future of medicine is lifestyle. And what does it take to change someone's lifestyle? Well, it takes behavior change, and it takes knowing how to help someone move to point A, from point A to point B, and change those habits. And it's more than just motivation, cheerleading, and prescriptions.
Mm-hmm. That's very well said. And when you think about medicine, and I'm sure you go to the doctor just like all of us do when we have to, right? And you think about the now all too common 15-minute visit. Like mm-hmm. you go to see a doctor or even a nurse practitioner in a lot of, you know, family practice types of settings where, you know, you don't have the luxury of time.
Yeah.
So where are we failing people when everything is scrunched into these 15-minute visits? What doesn't happen when we are so limited in terms of time?
Yeah. There's a doctor who I really love and respect, James D. Nicolantonio. I might be saying that wrong, but he has a quote that says, if you have a doctor that writes you a script before he asks you about your sleep, your movement, your stress, and your nutrition, you have a drug dealer, not a doctor. And so I think what's really getting missed is the human aspect of it. You know, like the pill for an ill piece of that isn't looking at why that person has that ill in the first place. What is the root cause of that? Where did it come from? How do we actually address that root cause instead of just slap a Band-Aid on the symptom? And when we only have 15 minutes with a patient, there's not a chance in the world that I can ask them about their sleep. That conversation in itself is a 15-minute conversation, let alone the conversation about their nutrition and their stress level. And, you know, they're taking care of their ailing parents and they've got three kids at home. Like that's an hour and a half conversation to really understand what's going on with them. And then it requires a long-term relationship of checking in. How's your stress going? Have you been able to implement that meditation routine? What does your food look like? Were you able to eliminate sugar this week? And when you have a 15, I mean, the whole practice of medicine, in my opinion, gets lost in those 15 minutes because doctors got into this and nurse practitioners to love people and care for people and hear people and understand their stories and really help them get well. And that whole practice, that whole ability to actually understand someone is out the window when you have 15 minutes to talk to them. It's not even enough time to like buy gas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point. And when you read articles about the 15-minute visit, and I don't want to belabor this point, but since we're just talking about it, you don't just read about patients' frustration with it. You also read about providers' frustration with it. And yeah. Oftentimes it's driven by, you know, the profit-driven model. And when you're seeing a doctor within, you know, a health system, they are limited. And I see a functional medicine doctor here in New Mexico, and her practice is a one-woman practice. Like, she's the only provider. Her son works the front desk, and she has somebody who answers phones who's out of state, but takes care of all the administrative stuff and answers emails and texts. But it's just her, you know? Mm-hmm. And when I call to make an appointment with her, I see her. And, you know, our appointments are minimum 30 minutes, but oftentimes they're an hour, which feels very, very old-fashioned to me at this point. Mm-hmm. And because she has a functional medicine orientation, we do talk about nutrition and we talk about, you know, blood work, and we look at different ways in which we could approach, you know, trying to pick apart what's going on with me. And she does write me prescriptions, you know, because there's some that I need, right? But we talk about a lot more than that. And we talk a lot about supplements, actually. We probably talk more about supplements than prescriptions, you know, which I think is a good thing. Mm-hmm. So when you think about health coaching, and it is sort of a really burgeoning field right now, so it's not like it's brand new. It's really kind of in a growth phase. Mm-hmm. When you think about bringing the two together, like bringing health coaching together with the medical model, how do you see that working, and have you seen it work? And maybe you can't talk about a particular practice because you don't want to mention them by name. It's up to you. But what have you seen, and what do you surmise about the marriage of the two?
Yeah, it's a beautiful collaborative care model. And Harvard Health published an article 3 years ago now that said any medical practice that doesn't have a health coach by the end of 2024 will be behind the curve. So we're there. But the reason it's such a beautiful combination is because the doctor is the expert in medicine, right? They're the expert in prescriptions. They're probably the expert if they're functional based in supplements. They are the detective. They know how to figure out what the root cause is, and they know how to create the plan. But most doctors, because they have a prescriptive mindset and or because they just don't have time, even in the practice like you're talking about where it's a one-woman show, you know, her time is really best spent kind of in that diagnostic and plan creation and plan tweaking. Her time is not best spent teaching her patients to read ingredient labels and, you know, buy the pasta sauce that doesn't have sugar in it. Her time is not best spent doing a deep dive on all household cleaners and how those household cleaners have endocrine disruptors. And if you're dealing with low testosterone or estrogen that's out of whack, your laundry detergent might actually be the reason for that. And then, okay, well, if my laundry detergent is the reason for that, what on earth do I get that actually makes my clothes smell, you know, not like body odor when it comes out of the washing machine. That's not what her role is. That's not what the doctor's role is. And it shouldn't be, because she has been through a decade and a half of school to be able to be the detective and understand all of the functions of the root of the body and the root causes and all of these things. So the way that it works beautifully together is the doctor gets to be the detective and the health coach gets to be like the peer, the mentor, and the friend. Another thing that I've seen really work well. So part of my practice is a dual practice. People come to us directly off the street. They find us for gut health and adrenal health, but we also plug health coaches in a fractional model to providers. So nurse practitioners and doctors, in order to create this collaborative care model. And one of the things that we found is that a lot of times patients will tell us something as the health coach that they won't tell the doctor, because the doctor is kind of in this elevated position to some degree, like up on a pedestal in people's minds. And so they feel really embarrassed that they, you know, like aren't taking their supplements or they didn't work out this week or whatever it is. But as health coaches, we're a little bit more on their level. We're a little bit more of a peer-to-peer relationship. And so they feel safer to tell us these things. And when we have both perspectives, both the practitioner and the health coach working on a collaborative care team to help these patients, we see people get results in half the time, a quarter of the time. It's really pretty amazing. We have a practice that we work with, amazing functional medicine practice, two different practitioners, a nurse practitioner and a nutritionist. They are absolutely drowning. When we started working with them, they had a 6-month wait list. And what we were able to do, because the doctors, the practitioners were doing all the things, like they wanted their people to get better. So they were teaching the classes and doing endocrine disruptors and all the things. And so we were able to come in and say, hey, you know, if you do this part and we do this part, we can open up your schedule so that you can take more people, meaning you can take more money. You're going to pay us less than you're paying your other practitioners, because we're health coaches. Not that we're, you know, less than, but we're a different skill set. And let's see what happens. We increased their profitability by 30% and we got their 6-month wait list down to a 1-month wait list in 4 months.
Wow. So are you saying, I just want to understand and have the audience understand what you're saying, that you came in as outside, I guess, consultants, and you said, look, mm-hmm. if you work with us, this is what we could do together. Is that what you were doing?
Exactly. Yeah. So we come in as outside business consultants, but then we also have health coaches that we plug into your practice. So you don't have to go find a health coach. You don't have to go interview a health coach. You don't have to find a health coach. You don't have to hire a health coach. You don't have to figure out how to work with a health coach. We do all of that with you. And then, you know, if your health coach leaves for some reason, we have depth of team, so we can plug in another health coach. But yeah, it increases profitability of clinics. It increases patient outcomes dramatically of clinics. And that's, you know, that's the win. We make more money. Our patients pay less and they get better results. Like, who doesn't mm-hmm. want that? And that's right. That's really what that collaborative care model does, both for practices and for patients.
So if a straightforward, like, medical practice who sees patients on a daily basis brings in health coaches like yours, for instance, right? Mm-hmm. Does that by default make them a functional medicine practice? Or, you know, what has to happen fundamentally to transform a practice to be functionally oriented?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'm going to answer that in two different categories. Having a health coach does not make you a functional medicine practice. Insurance companies are now bringing on health coaches because they've figured out, hey, if we, you know, assign a health coach to these people who have higher risk factors and they reduce their risk factors, we pay less. That's a win. So traditional medical practices have health coaches. Insurance companies have health coaches. Businesses, like big corporate businesses, now have health coaches because they figured out if we have healthier employees, our employees produce more work. So just having a health coach doesn't make you functional. What makes you functional is understanding the root cause model of medicine. So for example, you have a patient come in and they're dealing with eczema and psoriasis. They're dealing with like kind of foggy thinking or depression and anxiety. Maybe they're dealing with resistant weight loss or they're dealing with some slow metabolism things. Just that list, there's 14 medications that person could walk out of a traditional Western medicine practice with, like steroids for their skin, you know, a thyroid medication. A functional medicine practice says, okay, those symptoms are leaves on the tree. And the problem is the roots. So something is going wrong that is causing all of these symptoms. And if we can address that root cause, then all of those symptoms are going to go away, very likely without any medication. And so we go in and we say, okay, is that coming from mold and toxicity? Is that coming from, you know, gut permeability in your GI tract? Is that coming from a lifetime of a standard American diet and you don't have enough nutrients for your cells to actually function and create energy? What is the root cause of where all of that is coming from? Sometimes it's more than one root cause. And we deal with that root cause. And then all of a sudden, the person is eczema free. Their depression has lifted. Their anxiety has dropped from a 7 to a 2. And they're losing weight for the first time in 10 years. That's what makes a functional practice functional. And the key part for that with health coaching is that the prescriptions with functional medicine, quote unquote prescriptions, are, you know, like we need to go on a food plan that doesn't include any sugar and or processed food. I need you to start exercising, but not doing HIIT exercises because your cortisol is through the roof and your adrenals are in the toilet. So we need to start walking. We need to start doing strength training. We need to start, you know, building these lifestyle habits. And that's where health coaching comes in, because the doctor is going to write this quote unquote prescription of all of these lifestyle things and then hand that to the patient and be like, if you want to get better, this is what you have to do. And then the patient goes, how do I do that? And then we step in as health coaches and say, okay, we're going to take this one step at a time. We're going to make, you know, 2-degree micro lifestyle shifts. And a year later, you're going to be a different person. So that's kind of a twofold answer to that question.
That's a good answer. And when you say HIIT, you mean high intensity, what is it called?
High intensity interval training.
Interval training, right.
Yeah. And fantastic for some patients, counterintuitive for others.
Yeah, for people who have high cortisol levels, et cetera, they, mm-hmm. you don't want them trying to do that. Maybe not, or at least at first, you want them to start in the place that's going to work for them.
Yeah, we need to get their cortisol levels down before we can, you know, a HIIT workout is eustress, it's good stress. But if your cortisol levels are already through the roof, then it's bad stress. And you can do all the HIIT workouts that you want, but your body still thinks it needs to save calories to run away from a saber-toothed tiger because it doesn't understand the difference. And so you can do HIIT workouts till you die and you're not going to lose a pound if you're dealing with adrenal issues. Yeah.
Right. Right. So you're a health and wellness coach, you're a fitness and nutrition expert, and you're a functional medicine nutrition counselor. So, you know, to become a health and wellness coach, there's lots of different schools and training programs that you can work through. So what was your journey like when you decided to, you know, go after these types of certifications and trainings? Where did you start?
Yeah. So my journey, I came out of college. I thought I wanted to go to medical school. I ended up doing Teach for America, which I thought was going to be a 2-year bridge and ended up being 9 years. So I taught math for 9 years. It was awesome and excruciatingly hard. And I got super sick. And so what happened for me is I got super sick. I went to 7 different doctors and got absolutely zero answers. Left all my doctor's offices crying because no one could figure out what was wrong with me. And to go back to our first conversation, no one listened long enough to even like ask me what was wrong. They just said like, oh, you're in your 20s. Like you're healthy. Sorry, you have shingles. And so I sort of stumbled into functional medicine for myself, looking for answers, going, I cannot live like this. I'm 24. I'm so sick. I can't function. There has to be an answer. So I found functional medicine first. And then I fell in love with it and thought, you know, I want to go back to school and I want to do this. So when I was looking for programs, I was looking for programs that focused on nutrition, that focused on functional medicine, and that focused on that behavior change aspect, because that's such a huge piece. And so I found Functional Medicine Health Coaching Academy, FMCA, which is part of IFM, so Institute for Functional Medicine. Institute for Functional Medicine right now is the absolute gold standard for functional medicine. And I said, that sounds great. So I applied, I got accepted, and it was a year-long program. As health coaches, we go through the same curriculum that a provider would go through. So we have all the same knowledge, but we're coming at it from the behavior change perspective instead of the prescriptive perspective. And that's how I decided to do it. Now that I own my business and I'm hiring health coaches and I'm giving clients to my health coaches and I'm plugging health coaches in, I have learned that there is a dramatic difference in health coaching programs. There are health, you can go get a health coaching certificate this weekend for like $150. It will teach you absolutely nothing. And it doesn't, you know, give you any authority to do anything, but you have a piece of paper. Or you can go through something like FMCA or IIN, which is Integrative Institute for Nutrition. And that's a year-long program and you come out incredibly educated. So for my company, I only hire from FMCA and IIN. Occasionally I'll hire from Dr. Sears, but that's it. And what I'm looking for is I'm looking for someone who is on the track to become nationally board certified. So Board of Medical Examiners, same board that certifies brain surgeons, now has a certification program for health coaches. And that obviously holds us to a way higher standard. We're able to work in medical practices. We're able to bill insurance, that kind of stuff. And there's, you know, there's a massive difference. People who work for Beachbody and sell protein powder call themselves health coaches, but it's a very different process from what we're doing in functional medicine and under the national board exam.
Right. And I'm curious about the Institute for Functional Medicine. You know, what was your experience or is your experience with them, with the IFM?
Yeah, I'm obsessed with them. I love them.
Why is that?
They are really intentional about staying on the cutting edge of research and science. So they're very research-based. They're very science-backed. They're very medical. They are not like woo-woo, here's your crystals and like hope it works out for you. They are, you know, this is double-blind tested. This is placebo-controlled. This is research that's coming out of PubMed and we know that this works. And I think that that's super important, especially when you're talking about people's health, because, you know, I'm not saying that crystals don't work, but there's not a lot of research on them. I absolutely know that bone broth and apple cider vinegar do work. And I not only know that because I've seen it work for my patients, but I know it because it's research backed and it's time tested. And so IFM does a really good job of staying up to date on research, staying up to date on best practices, shifting their best practices as new research comes out, and being really science backed and really research focused, which I think is a big deal.
Yeah. Well, when we come back from the break, I want to talk more about all of this. I want to talk about some of the common things that we see patients, I'm going to say struggling with, but I actually want to say suffering with. You know, IBS, SIBO or SIBO, depending how you pronounce it. You know, all of these chronic, painful, difficult kind of life pervading conditions that oftentimes allopathic medicine doesn't have a whole lot to say about, or they're throwing prescriptions at it, or they're just telling people to, you know, go figure it out because they don't know what to say, you know, or the doctor will say, oh, that's really hard. You know, I've had people tell me they've heard things like that, like, oh my gosh, that must be so hard. But then there's nothing else forthcoming. So I want to talk about some of these common things that we're seeing that functional medicine is actually having really great success with, that I know you could talk about all of these and more. And I'd also like to talk more about gut and adrenal health in general, because I know those are some of your areas of specialization where you have some very specific experience and expertise to share. So when we come back, we're going to talk more with Hallie Brook. She is a functional medicine nutrition counselor, health and wellness coach, and fitness and nutrition expert. And we'll be right back with her for the second half of episode 470 of the Nurse Keith Show. Welcome back to the second half of the episode. We're here again with friend of the pod and my new friend, Hallie Brook. She is a functional medicine nutrition counselor, health and wellness coach, and fitness and nutrition expert. And Hallie, before the break, we were talking about so many things. We were talking about the ways in which allopathic medicine has failed patients and also failed providers in a way. And I think there's frustrations on both sides of the stethoscope, because most providers want to help their patients and some are constrained by ubiquitous 15-minute visit that we mentioned early in our conversation. And they're constrained by many things. Maybe some of it is lack of knowledge on their part and lack of time. And you were talking about how the doctor, whose name escapes me, who said that any practice who doesn't have a health coach by the end of 2024 is behind the curve. And I think that's probably like 99.5% of practices yeah. right now, most likely. I mean, even my doctor who's functional medicine, she doesn't have a health coach on staff, which I think would be really awesome. So yeah. I think there's a lot of room for growth there for everybody. But I'm curious, the first question I want to ask you was about some of these conditions that are sort of touchstones for you. They're mm-hmm. centerpieces of a lot of what you do because of your background and your training. And I wanted to start with small intestinal bacterial overgrowth,
yeah.
SIBO, or is it SIBO?
SIBO, yep.
SIBO, and an IBS, right? Because mm-hmm. those are probably more common than we think. And
yes.
everyone knows what IBS is, right? Irritable bowel syndrome. And I think there's a lot of causes that we could trace as the underpinnings of IBS, but also SIBO. Tell us a little bit about it, because I don't think most people have heard about small intestine bacterial overgrowth, but I think it's really important to understand.
It is super important to understand. So we'll start with IBS. And then we'll get to SIBO because it's a part of IBS. So irritable bowel syndrome, it can either be chronic diarrhea or chronic constipation, or you alternate back and forth. And fast forward the very end of my story, after I graduated from FMC, I did an internship with a gastroenterologist. And I asked her at one point, I said, you know, what is IBS? When we diagnose someone with that, what does it mean? And point blank, she goes, oh, that's what we diagnose someone with if we don't know what's wrong with them and we don't know how to fix it. And I was like, awesome.
Wow.
That explains so much of my story, which maybe we'll get into, maybe we won't, but that's what a board certified GI doctor told me. So that's a huge deal. So SIBO is part of IBS. It can be the cause of a lot of IBS symptoms, and it means small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. And basically what it means is your large intestine is where all of your colonocytes live. So when you hear the word microbiome or good bugs, good bacteria, all of those guys live in your large intestine. Your small intestine is relatively sterile, and it actually doesn't have a lot of bacteria by design. But sometimes, for a variety of reasons, whether it's stress or it's eating too frequently or it's eating poor quality food or it's being constipated and not processing, there's a bunch of things that can cause it. But that bacteria from your large intestine will creep up into your small intestine and start populating your small intestine and then wreak havoc. The symptoms of SIBO are everything from fatigue, brain fog, rashes, gas and bloating, severe stomach cramps, low iron. Like, I mean, name a symptom, it can come from SIBO because that bacteria is not supposed to be there. And so because that bacteria is in a place that it's not supposed to be, think about, you know, you have skin, you have bacteria on your skin. If you cut your skin open and that bacteria goes inside, that bacteria, which was harmless, now is harmful and is causing a lot of issues. You got to get that solved. So that's really what SIBO is it's potentially good bacteria, but it's in the wrong place. And because it's in the wrong place, it's causing a lot of issues. And so the process to heal from that is to get rid of that bacteria in your small intestine, hopefully without destroying the good bacteria in your large intestine. A lot of Western medicine doctors will just straight prescribe antibiotics and that just whacks all the bacteria in your body, which is not ideal, but we got to get that out of your small intestine and then kind of heal the damage and the inflammation that that's caused. So it's tested with a breath test, and it's really pretty common for people who have, you know, unresolved IBS that no one can figure out. A lot of times it's SIBO, not always, but sometimes.
Was this your personal story? Was this part of what was plaguing you that no one had identified until you went the functional medicine route?
Yeah, it was. So yeah. I was 24 and I had all the symptoms. Crazy symptoms. My arms went numb when I would eat. I look at pictures from then and my skin is gray and I have dark sunken in eyes, but I was healthy. I was exercising. And I grew up in Boulder, Colorado. So, you know, like I only eat organic food and grass-fed meat. And like on paper, I was healthy. But I was not okay. I was so sick. I ended up getting shingles at age 24, which don't get shingles at age 24. Like that doesn't happen. No. And I went to the doctor and the doctor was like, well, that's weird. Like here's some steroid cream. And what had happened was I had leaky gut. So I had food particles and poop particles and bacteria particles leaking out into my body. It's called gut permeability or intestinal permeability is the more medical term for that. And then my immune system was freaking out and attacking all the food that I was eating. Every single time I ate stuff, it was attacking my body, which then started attacking other things. So I was hardcore down the path towards autoimmune disease. And then I ended up with small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. So all of the things, all of the good foods, kale, spinach, asparagus, just made me feel like absolute trash. I would eat those things and it looked like I was 6 months pregnant and I had unbelievable stabbing pain in my gut and in my back. Like I was not okay. And then I would eat something like pasta that doesn't ferment in your gut. And I would, you know, not feel great, but I wouldn't feel as bad as I did when I ate kale. And at this point, SIBO is still, it's not new. It's been around for a long time, but most GI clinics don't think about it. They don't test for it. It's a breath test. You have to send it out. It's kind of weird. And so I ended up seeing 7 different doctors. No one could figure it out. And kind of down the road, as I started looking into things, I found this thing, SIBO, and I was like, maybe I have that right, self-diagnosing. And so I ended up finding someone who could do the breath test and like, yep, indeed, I have methanobacter in my small intestine. And as soon as we figured out that, then we were able to do kind of some like oregano things. And I was able to shift my eating. I was one of the people who thought that eating 5 little meals a day was better. Turns out you really need, you know, 4 to 5 hours between meals to get that good gastro cleansing wave that moves things through to help move that bacteria down. And so I figured that out and I did a lot of research on my own and I started changing the way that I eat and think and process. And I don't have any issues anymore. And now I'm 30 and I'm 1,000 times healthier than I was at 25.
Amazing. Wow. Yeah. What a story. And I bet this whole thing of SIBO is new to most of the people listening because you don't really hear about it a whole lot. Like it's not in the popular literature. It's not in the nursing literature that I see. And it's probably not in a lot of the mainstream medical literature either. So you don't hear about it. And that's amazing what that gastroenterologist said to you. that's shocking, but I guess it shouldn't be shocking, but it is shocking. But in terms of a lot of the other things going on with many people, you know, you and I were talking about adrenal fatigue briefly during the break. And you also mentioned, you know, all sorts of menstrual issues, you know, heavy menses, painful menses, PCOS, right? Polycystic ovarian syndrome, endometriosis. We have all the kind of menstrual stuff. And then you mentioned during the break, you mentioned type 2 diabetes, which of course is rampant, and the obesity epidemic. I don't think we need to tell anyone listening to this show that it's a thing, right?
Right. Yeah.
Not just in the United States, but it is here for sure. And then you mentioned Alzheimer's, and you said that Alzheimer's is now called type 3 diabetes.
Yeah.
So let's talk about all of the above. So give me Hallie Brooks, like cliff notes on this whole constellation of stuff that you see that is plaguing so many people and probably frustrating a lot of providers too, who can't quite put their finger on it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll go backwards down that list. So starting with Alzheimer's, which is now being called type 3 diabetes, like you said, what we have found and what the research and literature is now showing us is we know that type 2 diabetes is severe insulin resistance, right? Your body is produced so much insulin for so long that your cells stopped accepting that insulin. And now your body either can't produce insulin or doesn't produce enough, or you're still so resistant that it's not a thing. Well, what we've learned is that Alzheimer's, which is way down the road from that, means that your brain cells have now become resistant to insulin. Well, think about the way that any cell works. The cell needs energy in order to function properly, right? Well, where does that energy come from? way down the road, it eventually comes from carbohydrates. Even when we eat protein, our body through glycolysis and all of the different enzyme pathways turns protein into carbohydrates so that our body can use it. And if our brain cells can't get access to that energy because of severe insulin resistance, then we start to see dementia and Alzheimer's. And we're calling those things type 3 diabetes because really what it is it's severe insulin resistance to the point that your brain can no longer accept energy from your body. And if your brain can't accept energy from your body, what do you think is going to happen? Well, you're going to lose your memory. You're going to start going down that path. So back that up to type 2 diabetes and the obesity epidemic, you know, when we look at what life looked like even 50 years ago. So we could go way back 100 years ago, 200 years ago. But even if we look at 50 years ago, there was, you know, maybe 1/10 of the processed food that we have access to today. People were eating real food. That food did not have added sugar in it. And so even if they were eating too much of it, it was hard to get overweight. Like you kind of had to work at getting overweight. You know, 100 years ago, being overweight meant that you were rich because you got to eat all the food and you got to eat the sugar food and you got to eat the really high fat food that nobody else had access to. That has dramatically changed in our culture today. Now we have access to, I mean, everything is processed. I can buy things real or I can buy it processed, including strawberries. Everything has added sugar in it because there are scientists at food companies who want to figure out how to make their food addictive, and they're really dang good at it. So why does everybody like Heinz ketchup over the organic ketchup? Because food scientists have figured out how to make it addictive, and they've done that by putting additives and sugar and all of these things that destroy your body and create insulin resistance and all of these things. So when we think about Alzheimer's, type 2 diabetes, obesity, the first choice that you have to make is I am going to live different than 90% of the world, or at least 90% of the Western world. And that can be a really challenging choice. It means that, you know, you can't just swing by the gas station grocery store and pick up a snack. Like you have to think ahead, but you have to make that decision that really food industry has made us sick. And they are perfectly happy to keep us sick and addicted. And so you have to decide that you don't want to be that anymore. So that's kind of those two: heavy periods, heavy menstrual cycles, PCOS, endometriosis. Those existed 50 years ago, 100 years ago, but they were rare. When someone had a heavy menstrual cycle or they had, you know, one of those PCOS or endometriosis, it was, you know, one in thousands. Now it's probably one in 10. And when we think about what's causing that, well, what is it? It's a hormonal issue, right? If you're having issues with your menstrual cycle, you're having issues with your hormones. Well, let's look at what is driving our hormones. Your hand soap, your laundry detergent, your air freshener for when you poop and it smells bad, your Lysol wipes that we got totally addicted to during the pandemic. Almost every single item in your house is a toxic endocrine disruptor. An endocrine disruptor means a hormone disruptor. So you are using something, touching something, breathing something, eating something, licking something. I laughed. My sweet husband came home one day with like Tide pods for the dishwasher. And I walked in the house and I was like,
oh my gosh,
what is that smell? Like, get that out of the house. And I made him take them back. I was like, we're not using this, but think about like you're putting that on your dishes and no, your dishwasher does not wash off 100% of it. And then you are literally eating something that disrupts your hormones. So why do you have really heavy, hard, awful periods? Why are you dealing with severe endometriosis? Why are you dealing with PCOS? Because you are disrupting your hormones 150 times a day. And so now those things are really common and we're seeing those things start to get passed down generation to generation because it's changing the way bodies work. It's changing metabolism. It's changing microbiome. It's changing all of these things that we pass to our kids. So how do we fix that? Well, we start by removing endocrine disruptors from our lives. And that can sound really overwhelming, but like, let's start with your laundry detergent. Mm-hmm. And then let's look at your dishwasher pods. We'll do one thing at a time. That's a huge thing. I always say hormones affect everything and they are affected by everything. So if you have an issue that is a hormonal issue, then you have to change everything. Mm-hmm. And that can be really overwhelming. But again, that's where health coaching comes in. Like, we're going to do this one step at a time. We're not going to go trash all the plastic in your house. There's another one, plastic, that has BPAs that are, you know, phytoestrogens and are lowering men's testosterones and messing up women. We have more men with low testosterone and more men in their 30s who are dealing with erectile dysfunction than we had men in their 70s and 80s dealing with erectile dysfunction 20 years ago. Like, that's a problem.
Something's wrong there.
If you're a man and you're dealing with ED in your 30s, mm-hmm. you know, there's no shame on that, but like, let's change your lifestyle because that's not going to work out for you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
yeah,
you know, everything affects everything. Sounds really impossible, but we start one step at a time and we look at all of the conveniences and all of the things in our lives that actually are really poisonous and toxic to our bodies, and we have to start changing them.
Yeah. And the picture you're painting of like 50 years ago and now makes me really worried for 50 years from now. I think of the children who are just being bombarded with all of this. I mean, we all know, like many of us have heard, that if you take a newborn's hair and you take a little hair sample and you do a chemical analysis, you can't even imagine, or maybe you can, the chemicals that are in that baby's physiological system at the time. And, you know, it's funny, I've experienced this over the years periodically, like an older person in my life who's say in their 80s or 90s or even 70s maybe, who are like, what's all this about organic food? Like no one talked about organic food when we were kids. And, you know, why do we have to go spend all this money on organic food now? You know, I never had to do it before. And the point I try to make whenever I have those conversations is, well, when you were a kid before World War II, sometimes it's like around World War I, everything actually was organic. There actually was no inorganic food for the most part, because do you know when all those pesticides and all the stuff that we're all complaining about right now and worried about, do you know when they came into being? After World War II, with all the chemical industrial complex that kind of was born out of all of the technological innovation post 1945, mm-hmm. I guess you could say, right? So,
well, just talk about glyphosate. So glyphosate is Roundup, you know, the whole thing with Monsanto and Roundup Ready food. And now mm-hmm. we spray our lawns with glyphosate, and then our dogs walk on the lawns, and then the dogs walk in the house, and then we walk in the house. So just glyphosate, just that one herbicide, and there's millions. It wasn't invented mm-hmm. until 1970. It wasn't patented until 1971, and it didn't start being widely used until 1984. So why are our grandparents not talking about organic food? Because the pesticides that are killing us didn't exist. Like, it wasn't an option. Now, why is it so important? Because glyphosate is a listed carcinogen, but we just dunk our apples in them and think that's totally fine. Like, no. Yeah. So mm-hmm. why was it so different 50 years ago? Because a lot of these things didn't exist. And what you're talking about, the generation that comes after us, I think we're starting to see, and maybe this is just my Instagram feed because it's what I'm into, but we're starting to see people choosing to buy land and to homestead and to go back to like making our own food and raising our own chickens and doing all these things, because what we buy at the store, even if you're buying organic, is 80% less nutrient dense than it was even 30 years ago. So
that's very true.
If we want to set our families up and our generations up, like, man, we got to do something different. We got to do something different fast.
And that is very hard to do these days, right?
So hard to do. And not everybody has the option to do that.
It's true. Yeah. You know, very recently I discovered an app. I forget where I came across it. I can't remember, but it's called Yucca or Yuka. Have you heard of mm-hmm. that one? It's Y-U-K-A. And I have it on my phone.
Yeah.
And when I go to the store, you can do this with cleaning products, and you can do it with, you know, most foods like cereal and, you know, all sorts of things you would buy at the store, you know, like soy milk or anything, yogurt. And all you have to do is use the app and you scan the barcode on the product that you want to buy, and it rates it from excellent to, I think, very poor or poor. And it tells you exactly why that product is rated poor or very poor or excellent. And I find it really helpful. And I generally buy very healthy things, but it does help me. It's helping me refine some of my purchases a little bit. And then it makes me think twice about certain things. And I mean, I shop very well, but still, there'll be a little something I'll want to buy and I'll be like, you know, it'll be sort of the sound like, wah, wah. I wish the app would make a sound like that. And I'd be like,
that would
okay,
be awesome.
Now I know I can't buy this. Or if I buy it, it's like, okay, I'm not going to buy it every week. I'm going to buy it right now. It's going to be a special treat, but this isn't going to be something I'm working into my diet on a regular basis. So it sounds like you've heard of that app and you've used it.
Yeah, I love, so the Yucca app, there's another Yucca, one called called Think Dirty. There's another one called the EWG, Environmental Working Group.
Mm-hmm. They've been around a long, long time.
They've been around a long, long time. And those are the three that I have on my phone. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they're so helpful just to give you that information. And I think you bring up a really good point that just what the packaging says doesn't mean it's good. If you've heard the term greenwashing, you know, you can go to Walmart and you can walk down the hair aisle and it's like, you know, BPA free or fight whatever free. And then you scan it and it's like a red. It's like, do not buy this product. So, you know, even relying on labels, relying on marketing, like you have to learn and you have to be informed. And it's so wonderful that we have apps like that to help us do that, because it's hard and it takes work and it takes intentionality and it takes more time than a lot of times people are able or willing to give.
Right. And this is where we circle back to the beginning of our conversation around functional medicine, right? And health coaching and functional, you know, nutrition, et cetera, and all the things that you practice and all the things that you're helping to bring to medical practices who want to bring this type of information and lifestyle modifications to their patients or clients, and they just can't do it themselves. Mm-hmm. So one question I have for you, because you're an expert in a lot of these areas, you know, gut health, adrenal health, all the things that you mentioned before, and all the things that we need to be conscious of and help our patients, at least raise our patients' consciousness about them so they can realize it's not just that there's something wrong with them. It's that there's something wrong with the world around them and there's things they can do. Mm-hmm. So here's a question. Most of my listeners are nurses. So if I'm a nurse and, you know, I'm a boots on the ground staff nurse, you know, I work in a clinic, I work in a hospital, I work in home health, whatever it is I happen to do. I'm not a health coach. I'm not trained in functional medicine. Let's say I want to make a change myself. Like I want to start with myself first because maybe I'm not feeling so great. Or maybe I notice members of my family aren't feeling so great. So what are some of the very, very first steps someone can take if they realize like, I need to change something, but I don't know where to start?
Yeah. Absolutely. Real basic, swap any kind of soda, including diet soda, for water with electrolytes. Okay. Get rid of soda, start drinking water, super basic. You'll feel better within 3 days. The next thing that you can start to do is think about the way that you're designing your meals. Even if you're doing takeout, try to make half of your plate colorful vegetables. So if you're running late and you're coming home from a shift, go to Noodles & Company and get their zoodle bowl with pesto. You've got, you know, four different vegetables in that and a good lean protein. So start thinking about getting color on your plate and getting real vegetables on your plate. Real fruits, real vegetables, real food. Just start thinking about real food. And then the next thing that I would do, especially for nurses, you know, I have so much mad respect for you guys. You have such an important and hard and stressful job. CDC now recognizes chronic stress is more toxic than smoking a pack of cigarettes a day. So my joke, which is absolutely a joke, is like become a smoker because smokers are less stressed. They take a 10-minute break every hour. But the non-part of that joke is even in your crazy day where you are running between patients, you are running between houses, you are filling out charts, you're doing all of the things, pause, try to pause between every patient, put your hand on your heart and just take 3 deep belly breaths. Three times. It's that simple. It will take you less than 15 seconds and it will start to reduce your cortisol. And when you start to reduce your cortisol, your brain will function better. You're going to start to lose weight. You're going to be able to think better. You're going to have more energy. You're going to have clarity of thought. Your joints will stop hurting. All sorts of things when you can reduce your stress. So, you know, even if it's that simple that, you know, every time I walk out of a room, I'm going to wash my hands and I'm going to take 3 deep breaths and then I'm going to go to the next patient. It's so easy to just run to the next patient, but taking those 3 deep breaths isn't going to make anybody wait any longer. And it'll help change your life dramatically.
That's really helpful. And for hardworking nurses and those who have those high stress levels, it feels like medical practices and hospitals run on coffee and caffeine. So <Yeah. laughs> I know if you remove sodas, you're removing a lot of sugar and caffeine, or if it's diet soda, you're at least removing the caffeine and all the other chemicals and all the other stuff that's in it.
Yep.
But do I, as a hardworking nurse, and I'm asking this sort of like for everyone.
Yeah.
Do I need to stop having any caffeine in my system?
My answer to that is it depends. If you are really truly dealing with health issues, you're struggling to lose weight, you feel tired, you've got brain fog, all of those things, then yeah, getting off caffeine is going to help you a lot. Caffeine is not inherently bad. I call caffeine a really complex drug because that's what it is. It's a drug and it's for some people, it's really helpful. For some people, it's really harmful. And then there's everything in between. But really, what the nurses actually need, what you just said, hospitals, people running the hospitals actually need is energy. And caffeine and sugar give you energy. The thing is, it gives you fake energy. Coffee gives you adrenal energy. So it's that fight or flight energy. It's not actually cellular level, I feel good energy. And sugar gives you really quick energy in your cells. It tells your cells like, all right, I got a little bit of stuff. I can keep going. What you really need is energy. So if you think about, okay, what I really need is energy. How can I fulfill that need? Well, spend a weekend and make some like protein balls that have peanut butter and some honey and some flax seeds and some chia seeds. It'll take you 30 minutes and then throw those in your locker. And every time you're craving that soda, go get a glass of water and eat a protein ball. Because what you actually need is energy. You don't need sugar or caffeine, but you do need energy because your body is going to fall apart if you don't have it. The thing is, drinking soda and caffeine, your body's going to fall apart eventually because it's all fake energy and short energy. So start asking yourself the question, how can I get my body energy in a way that works for my shift, that works for my lifestyle, that isn't also going to absolutely destroy my body? Because the need for caffeine and sugar is a need for energy, and we can figure out other ways to meet that need that nourish your body instead of damage it.
Well said. And we can also look at all the endocrine disruptors and everything else that we have in our personal lives. We can't change the ones that are in our work environment, right?
Right.
There's lots of endocrine disruptors, unfortunately, in the hospital environment where we're working and patients are exposed to them, but that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah.
We can't change that. So we can change a lot of the other factors and we can decrease our chemical load, so to speak, by changing what we're doing at home, not having the little, you know, air fresheners hanging from our rear view mirror, which always make me cringe, but
that's, I hate those things.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Don't get me started.
Yeah.
Okay. But what if I'm a nurse or a nurse practitioner, or maybe a doctor or someone else who happens to be listening or hears about this, who would like to bring health coaching and what you do to the practice where we work, can we work with you if we're not in Colorado? Like, do you work with distant organizations and medical practices? And what does that look like?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are fully remote. Thank you, COVID. We went remote during COVID and never went back. It actually works really well for health coaching because your members, your clients are able to book health coaching calls whenever it works for them. They don't have to find time to drive across town and go to your office and blah, blah, blah. They can do it in their car on their lunch break. So we are 100% remote. We work across all 50 states. It's one of the beauties of health coaching is our license, our certification covers us across states where I know nursing and MDs don't. And the best way to connect for that is to just send me an email or go to our website and send me a contact form. So go to our website, which is livenourishedcoaching.com. Click the contact us form that comes directly to my inbox. And we'll hop on a call and talk about what getting health coaching in your practice looks like. And, you know, if you're a nurse and you want to start with you and you feel like you need support because you're, you know, a mom or a dad and you're a nurse and you have this crazy career and you're super stressed and you're just drowning and you don't have any idea where to start, same thing, go to our website, click book a consult, and we'll just hop on the phone with you and talk you through it.
That's really great. And I know you're on Instagram at Live Nourished Coaching, and you yourself are on LinkedIn, and we'll have links in the show notes for everyone who wants to get in touch. And gosh, I could talk to you for so much longer, and we might have to have you back at some point later this year and kind of dive deeper into some of this, because this is really fun and fascinating and interesting and also frustrating because of all the things we know that have to change for us personally, but also for the medical system writ large.
Yeah.
But we do have to go shortly. And I have four quick lightning round questions that I ask all my guests at the end. And it really doesn't have anything to do with what we've been talking about. It's more about you personally. So awesome. Are you game? We'll have to keep them a little concise, but are you willing to answer a few questions?
Yeah, hit me.
Okay. So the first one, Hallie, is how do you define success, either personally or professionally?
Oh, I love that question. That's not a lightning round question, Keith.
I know.
That's like
a
whole podcast.
I know.
Here's my lightning round question. What I have defined as success has dramatically changed from my younger years to when I turned 30 and now I'm 35. What I define as success now is I wake up every day and I get sunshine on my face and I find gratitude for the things that God has blessed me with. I live my day serving others to the best of my ability and truly loving the people around me. And I go to bed feeling like I made a difference, even if it was just for one person.
That's really nice. Thank you. That's beautiful. Yeah. Okay. Second question. Could you name or describe one person who's inspired you in the course of your life? And it could be someone living or dead. It could be someone very, very famous, or someone from your personal life who none of us would know of or have ever had the chance to meet.
Oh, I love that. My honest answer would be my husband. He is so different from me in his slowness and his patience and just his steady joy. And I want to be more like that. I want to be more patient. I want to be more steady. And, just like the way that he loves, the depth to which he loves and cares for the people in his life inspires me to be better every day. So his name's Tyler and he's awesome.
That's really lovely. Well, that brings tears to my eyes. That's really lovely. And most people or many people mention a grandmother or mother or aunt, and I think you might be the first to mention a husband. So that's really nice. And I'm about to be a husband in a few months. So I really appreciate that. So
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Third question. Is there a book or a movie? Doesn't have to be an absolute favorite, but just something that comes to mind that has had a major impact on the way you think, the way you live, the way you approach your work, the way you approach your relationships, anything at all.
I'm going to completely embarrass myself with this answer. Okay. Legally Blonde. But here's why. Two reasons. Whenever I'm having a bad day or I'm feeling down or I'm feeling discouraged, I watch Legally Blonde and my day turns around and I'm just so much happier. But at a deeper level, I feel like Legally Blonde epitomizes the growth mindset of this is really hard and I am not equipped to do this and I have no idea how to do this, but I can do this. And I think that growth mindset is something that I really strive for. Like, I don't know how to do this yet. And so Legally Blonde just really inspires me. That's so embarrassing.
I love that. Some people have named stuff, you know, that's like really deep, and some people will think from popular culture, but that holds meaning for them. And I think all of us, or many of us, have like guilty pleasures. It's like the thing that that just like works for us, you know, mm-hmm. even if it's embarrassing. So I think that's great. I think that's really wonderful. Okay. Last question. If you, Halliebrook, were named queen of the world tomorrow, what's one of the first things you'd want to do to improve the lives of your subjects?
Oh, such a great question. I would eliminate glyphosate and dismantle Monsanto.
Wow. Okay. Love it. That's a beautiful one. And of course, you would have ultimate power, so you could do everything, but that would be a good place to start. I thought you were going to say every citizen of the world would have a health coach.
That would also be awesome.
Now, maybe that would be day two.
That would be day two. Yeah, maybe okay. Day three. Like, if we could like get rid of glyphosate and, you know, go back like 50 years in terms of our food, I don't know if anyone would need a health coach. Like, uh-huh. People would be pretty good.
Yeah, you would be like, Monsanto, you're going down.
Yeah, you're done.
That would be Queen Hallie's rest of the world. I think that would be great.
It would be awesome.
You would be a wonderful, beneficent queen, I have no doubt. And we'll have to have you come back because there is a lot more to talk about. But I really, really appreciate your time and your positivity and everything you bring to the table. So thanks so much for doing so much great work in the world.
Thank you so much. And thank you to you for doing so much great work in the world. Nurses are so undervalued and so desperately needed. I feel like nurses and teachers are in the same boat. Like, the world will not function without you. So please keep doing what you're doing while the world catches up to how valuable you are. So thank you.
Thanks, Hallie. Well, there you have it. Thanks for listening to this awesome episode of the Nurse Keith Show. Remember, the show notes will be at nursekeith.com. Please go to livenourishedcoaching.com. Livenourishedcoaching.com. You can also find Live Nourished Coaching on Instagram. You can find Halliebrook on LinkedIn. Links will be in the show notes. If you need personalized holistic career coaching, not health coaching, career coaching, look no further than nursekeith.com and Nurse Keith Coaching. Mention the show and get 10% off your first coaching package. And remember that we are proud members of the Health Podcast Network at healthpodcastnetwork.com. And we are adroitly produced by Rob Johnston of 520R Podcasting. Before we say goodbye, I'll leave you with this quote by Amelia Earhart. The most difficult thing is the decision to act. The rest is merely tenacity. So anyway, be well, dig deep, seek joy, keep in touch. This is Nurse Keith saying adios till next time from beautiful Santa Fe in New Mexico, and Halliebrook saying arrivederci from
Colorado Springs.
All right, Hallie, thank you so much. Thanks to everyone for listening. And we will catch you, of course, on the proverbial flip side.